I'm Silva Harapetian. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms. Hello, everybody. I'm Silva Harapetian. Welcome to another edition of our show. Now, today we're going to talk about entrepreneurship. And the reason we're going to talk about this is because COVID has made us think about what we do in our lives and how we live our lives. And a lot of people decide that they want to have a very specific lifestyle, and entrepreneurship is kind of what they're leaning towards. But you know, there's a dark side to entrepreneurship. There is a positive side to entrepreneurship. And it's an amazing journey if this is something that you want to do. And no one better to talk about this than Maria with a Y, because she always says, why not? Maria Palangian, serial entrepreneur. She is going to be talking to us about what it means to be a serial entrepreneur. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much for having me here. And I love this topic. I mean, I can talk about this every day.
So here's the thing. A lot of people within the community may know you. And a lot of people in the marketing industry and advertising industry may know you. But there's a lot of us that don't exactly know what you do. And even if we do, we're kind of too embarrassed to ask, what exactly does that mean? So let's go back a little bit about the history of how entrepreneurship sort of presented itself in your life. And then I want to talk about all of the businesses you've started and where you are today and where you hope to go. Is that okay?
I love it.
Okay, so this is going to be a masterclass on startup and entrepreneurship. I feel like I know a lot about it, but if you have a business, a small business, a brick and mortar business, or if you have an online business, or if you've been thinking about during these times of COVID that you want to pivot and have your side hustle and maybe ramp up your side hustle into an actual business, this is the show you should listen to. Talk to me about how you've been wanting to be an entrepreneur since you were six.
Yes. So I grew up in Armenia, in Yerevan, and at the time in the communist society. And there were times when I spoke about wanting to have my own business and people would just laugh at me and say, oh, you know, you're probably going to get married at 18 and have kids and be a stay-at-home mom. And I would start crying and say, no, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and all this stuff. And my mom pulled me aside one day and said, stop talking about it. Just do it. Luckily, we came to US, and this is where all of my dreams slowly started coming to reality.
Let me go back a minute. Sure. Now, you say that you've wanted to be an entrepreneur since you were six. Do you know where that desire came from? Like, did you see something? Did you witness something? What sparked that interest to begin with?
My dad was in the shoe industry, and he was working for this factory, and then he sort of ventured out on his own and, you know, went to Moldavia to start his own shoe factory. And for me, I think that was the moment, the obsession with shoes and then the obsession with what my dad was doing, starting venturing out on his own. So I would say, my father really inspired me.
That's amazing. See, that's probably a story you don't usually tell, huh?
I actually just realized I've never told that story.
Tell me about what about that move? How did that make you feel? Was there something about the freedom of that, or just the ownership of that, or the craftsmanship of that that really sparked that? Because that's to want to be an entrepreneur at six. Entrepreneurship is hard, particularly for someone at a six-year-old to think about, and a woman, and in a communist country, and within our community when we're expected to get married at 18 and have a family, right? Like, this is all just, so can you think about what that felt like?
I think one thing I realized at a younger age was the fact that I was a leader. I always knew I love leading. I would come up with ideas and then somehow convince everyone else to follow. And so I noticed that when my dad left, he convinced a few of his friends to join him in his venture and go to Moldavia. And obviously we followed him and we went with him. But I think that was that's as a child, I really didn't know much about entrepreneurship. I was going to a Russian private school. Obviously business was not anything that would be discussed in school, especially at that age. But leadership was really the one skill set that I noticed I have. I just loved to lead. I hated to follow. I just loved leading. And then as I grew older, I realized that entrepreneurship takes tremendous amount of leadership skills. You really need to know how to lead, not just people, but projects and ideas. And it's just, it takes a lot of things, but leadership is really one key component that you must have as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. This is why, if you're in the entrepreneurial space, you see a lot of talk about leadership, how to nurture yourself as a leader, yep. how to nurture other people within your organizations to be leaders, how to continuously feed yourself content and information about the power of leadership, about the steps in leading, and about how to be a better leader, how to be a more effective leader. And I think right. that gets lost in translation, right? When people talk about startups and entrepreneurship, they focus on the business plan, they focus on the numbers, they focus on the product, they focus on the process, and they forget to invest mm-hmm. in themselves and feed their leadership knowledge, because without that, all of those other things are irrelevant eventually, right?
As a founder of two companies and CEO of two companies, for me, leadership plays a huge role constantly. And I'm always educating myself, always looking at, you know, ways that I could become a better leader. I have mentors. I have mentors from all walks of life. A mentor who has 5 PhDs from Harvard and Stanford. And I have a mentor who's a very experienced small business entrepreneur. And I'm able to learn so many different skill sets and leadership skill sets and advice from all of them. So I feel like, to your point, it needs to be an ongoing learning journey for all of the entrepreneurs.
And I think we forget that, right? Because we become so engrossed in what we're doing on a daily basis, we forget that we have to continue to consistently learn. I want to talk a little bit about all your businesses. I mean, when you talk about a serial entrepreneur, there's really, you've not only done the online stuff, but you've also do the agency service stuff, but also the brick and mortar stuff. So usually when I talk to entrepreneurs, it's one or the other, but you have all three silos, which is extremely unique. So can you talk to me a little bit about where you started? And it sounds to me like they were in an online space and then moved into the retail and then services business. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I remember the moment that I really realized that I really can't work for anyone else was when I was in the fashion industry. I got hired to be a sales rep for Playboy, and I got hired to be the national sales manager, having zero experience, and went to Magic Show for the first time, and ended up selling a lot of, you know, products, wholesale products, and so on. And I was promised commission and verbally, nothing written, and then never got paid. And long story short, learned a really big lesson and realized that I, you know, there's so much that I need to learn, but at the same time, I don't want to work for anyone else. So I decided to go back to school and get my master's. And I promised to myself that if I ever go back into the fashion industry, which at the time was my favorite industry to be in, that I'm going to be my own boss. And so got my master's degree, and I want to say something about the way my journey has been with all of my businesses is kind of interesting. It's always been me trying to solve my own problem. So I finished school and I was planning my wedding, met my first partner in my first business and my first venture, who ended up, you know, sharing some of her ideas. As she was planning my flowers for my wedding, she actually gave me some ideas about things that she's been wanting to do, but she wasn't really tech savvy, and she just had the ideas, but didn't know how to execute it. And then pretty much proposed to me and said, would you be interested to start this venture with me? And I said, sure. I was 22, 23 years old. I jumped in, and she was much more experienced than me, and a little bit older than me. And so she really taught me. The first thing she taught me was how to act as if. She said, don't act small. Act like you've got it. You've got this. And just go with the flow. And we launched weddingish.com. That was the first venture we launched together. It was an online store where brides could buy anything from literally little gifts for their flower girls to favors, party favors, you name it. And it just started blowing up. It was just doing really well. And later on after that, a bunch of other companies started copying our idea and so on. But to sum it up, I, from that venture, and later on, I ended up sharing selling my shares and moved on. I got pregnant with my daughter and then got pregnant with my second daughter immediately after giving birth to the first one. And so decided to stay home a little bit and be a good mom. 2 years into raising my daughters, I'm just, this fire in me was burning. And I'm just like, I can't, I need to work. I need to do something. But, you know, I knew my priorities were my daughters, and then going back to solving problems, my best friend was getting married and she couldn't find bridal shoes. And that's while I was raising my two daughters, I'm like, wait, let me ask my dad if maybe my dad can connect me with some shoemakers and we can make you a bridal shoe. So we made the first bridal shoe. And from that moment on, and this was being done from home, literally, I would take the fabrics and the components to one guy's house. The guy would do his part, and then I would take it to another guy's house. And that's how I started Lanalia Shoes, which was a high-end bridal shoe company. Again, online, direct-to-consumer. I would cut out the middle guys to save money for my customers and basically customized. My shoes would range anywhere from $300 to $3,000 because they were all Swarovski crystals, and really grew that business to a whole different level where I took on investors and almost partnered with a huge Chinese company. But I had a moment where I had an epiphany in the midst of all of this. I was also on a reality TV show on TLC. The brand was really picking up in a matter of 2 years. It just blew up. But I went to my daughter's concert and she was singing, "All I Need in This World Is Food in My Belly, Love in My Family, and Sun in My Eyes." And I started bawling and I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm working 7 days a week. I'm not seeing my daughters. And here I am building this company, which has been a dream of mine, but I'm not there as a mother for my kids. And all she needs is so simple. So I called my investors this was another level of funding that I was going to get from the Chinese company. And I backed away from the deal. And so then after that, Kitson, at the time I had my shoe collection at Kitson, and the CEO of Kitson pulled me aside and he said, "How do you sell $3,000 shoes online? I just want to understand how you marketed it." And I gave him a few pointers and I said, "The rest you have to pay for it." And he's like, "Okay, I'll pay you. Come consult us. Come help us with our online company, online business." And so I ended up consulting them for about a year and I really loved it. I realized I love advertising and marketing and sales and consulting, but I wanted to know how to scale it. And so I joined an ad agency to figure out how to scale the consulting business. And then that ad agency turned into a 2-year job that I ended up loving, but I hated working for someone else. But I learned a lot and I made a lot of connections in the advertising space. And then my plan was to get in for 6 months, learn and get out and start my own marketing agency. But the plan turned into 2 years. And then I got recruited by New York Times to go and manage the execution team for influencer marketing. And I was like, oh, wait, let me go get this job to learn influencer marketing. And then I'll start an agency that can do a lot of different things, not just podcast advertising, radio advertising, but also influencer marketing. And so when I resigned from New York Times, after 8 months of getting my experience, literally, I was like, 6 months is my goal, get in, learn, get out. 8 months into it, I resigned and I gave them a 3-month resignation. And I said, you know, I need to be home more. It was just, again, the same issue. Santa Monica, my drive was almost 3 hours a day back and forth, excuse me. And so to sum it up, I ended up, I left New York Times, but they came back to me and they said, "Can you stay on as a contractor?" And I said, "Sure, just give me 2 weeks." let me go incorporate a business and let my business be the vendor, not a contractor. And so my employer became my first client. And so that was a really good way to start. But one thing I want to mention is, again, Globalfly, my marketing agency that I started, was also born out of a problem. The problem was I was working for New York Times, and a lot of the clients would come and say, we're spending all this money, but we don't see the ROI. We don't understand what's happening as a result of our spend. Can you give us some data? And because we were working with influencers, we were unable to give them data. And so that's when I came up with an idea of city takeover marketing, where I said, well, what if we do the campaigns instead of a national level, we can do it one city at a time. Then I can look at the baseline lift in traffic and be able to come back to the client and say, hey, this is how much traffic you've increased in sales and so on. And so that concept was really born out of a problem that my clients at the time there had. And then when I solved it, that's when I came up with an idea for my own agency. And when I ventured out on my own, I was very upfront with New York Times. I said, listen, I'm just going to do city takeover marketings. And if you guys want me to help you with anything, I'm here. And so for the first year, honestly, New York Times gave me a lot of leads. They would just, a lot of times it would be white labeling where I would just do things for them. And a lot of times it was just leads and so on. And so that's how that business started. And it's been growing. And one of our biggest clients is Next Trucking, which is on Forbes's next $100 billion company. And it's revolutionizing the trucking industry. It's kind of like Uber app for truck drivers. And we've got clients in many different verticals, but mostly tech startups that get funded hundreds of millions of dollars, and they want us to help them with customer acquisition. But one thing, I, again, going back to problem solving and coming up with an idea, I remember this one time when I was presenting to Mercedes-Benz, who later on became my client. I went in, I was preparing for the meeting, and my assistant called in sick. And I'm a boutique agency. At the time when I first started, I didn't have 20 employees, to go in and impress people. I was a small team with an assistant, and my assistant called in sick, and I got nervous because I was going to go and present in front of probably 10 people. So got nervous and ended up taking melatonin from Trader Joe's. Took that on an empty stomach to calm my nerves so that I don't get anxious when I'm presenting. And I'm in a meeting with 10 men. Okay. And my stomach starts growling to the point where they can hear the stomach growling. And I was so embarrassed after that. I was like, this is not good. I really need to come up with a solution to help with my anxiety, especially when I'm presenting, because I'm confident, I know what I'm doing, but somehow anxiety would take over me. And then to kind of go back a little bit, I sort of, before that, I started experimenting with CBD a little bit for my migraines. And then when I started getting anxious, I would try CBD, and I noticed that it actually helps me with my anxiety. And so I started taking CBD before my big meetings, and I realized that I'm calm, focused, and really confident. I was like, this is amazing. This is just amazing. I just never knew I could take something that's not going to have the side effects of a growling stomach or, like other things can blur your thoughts and all of that. And so to sum it up, that's how Roma Leaf was born. It was born out of a sort of a problem that I had where I wanted to make sure there's no THC in the product because I didn't want to go into meetings feeling high or anything else. And so it's just been this ongoing sort of journey with different business opportunities that sort of popped in to solve my own problem.
I'm Silva Harapetian. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.